That's somber.
Isn't that? It is. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show.
Which one am I?
Well, look at your name tag. It says Wendy on it. Hello, my name is Wendy.
I'm going to change it up to confuse you tomorrow.
I'm onto your ploy. I know what you're doing. Welcome to the show. Later on, Dane Neal will be stopping by, and we will discuss ice cream, the greatest food ever.
And then later, we're going to talk about Shark Week locally here at the Shedd Aquarium.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sharks eat ice cream.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you what happened to me yesterday on the way home, and if you can explain it, good.
I love these stories.
I don't understand.
I look forward to these, don't you, Bertrand?
Did anyone go to jail this time? Or?
No.
No?
No, I don't think anyone went to jail.
Okay.
Before I tell you the story, let me tell you this. I'm okay with the flip-off. I'm actually a fan of the flip-off. I think the flip-off says exactly what it needs to say to somebody if they do something to wrong you. You quickly flip them off, and that says, oh, I have wronged this person. And then you go about your business.
It is effective.
I'm a fan.
Mm.
It's very effective. You don't like it, Steve?
I don't like it.
How come? Because why?
I think it's uncivil.
It is uncivil.
Yeah.
Easy, Miss Manners.
And it can lead to, it can escalate into things.
But that's what, they should pass a law saying the flip off, you could flip whoever flips you off, if you want to contend it, you can flip them off.
So just you do a flip and then your hand under your throat to say, that's it, cut off.
That's it. We're done. No, I've spoken my piece. You've done something.
I got your piece right here.
Or maybe do a flip with your hand palm over the finger so it says, that's it, we're capping
yes,
it here.
I'm okay with that, too. All right. So just so you know, the background is I have been flipped off, and sometimes I go, yeah, well,
I deserved it.
I
will own up to the flip off.
Yeah, yeah. I have flipped people off. I've been told by people very close to me to don't flip anybody off.
I don't anymore.
When did that stop, Wendy?
Probably about 10 minutes ago.
Really?
No, I really don't flip people off anymore. I'm scared to.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my middle finger might go up against a gun.
Oh, yeah. It can't.
Seriously.
That's why I'm saying Congress needs to jump in and say, once the flip-off happens, that's it. It's been said. It's been done. Go about your merry business. All right. So yesterday, as I'm driving home from here, I'm on Clark near Andersonville. Oh, in Andersonville, I would say. And there's a biker coming. I'm heading northbound.
A biker changes the whole story.
Not a biker, a Harley.
No, I know.
Somebody on a bicyclist. Somebody on a
Schwinn mean.
Or a Huffy. I don't know what it was. I'm going to say Huffy because this guy was Huffy. So let's say he was also riding a Huffy. All right. So I'm going northbound. He's coming southbound, but he's way off in the distance. I'm going to say 300 yards away. So far away in the distance that there's actually a traffic light between him and I. He's all the way over there. I'm all the way over here. We're not even close by. At that distance, at roughly 300 yards, let's say, that's the equivalent, just so people know, of 3 football fields, Wendy. You know that.
Yep.
You did the math, right? That's far off. So when I first see him, he's just a blip on the horizon.
A little speck.
Yeah. He's just way off there. As I progress and he progresses, he's riding his bicycle, and he's one of these bicycle riders that is serious about it. He's wearing
bike shorts.
Like a satiny type.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did he have a hat on? A Campagnola hat?
He had a helmet on.
All right.
And the riding shoes.
He had the riding shoes on. It said Cinzano on his pants. But I didn't know that until later. But because I'm telling you, he's just a speck way off in the distance. So I assume this is just going to be a normal transaction of me going home and him going to wherever he's going, and there's not going to be any trouble. And as he's riding, he just holds his hand up and is flipping me off from way off. Like as I see him, I go, oh, it looks like he's flipping me off, but why?
What'd you do?
I didn't do anything.
You think you might have been listening yesterday morning?
Steve, I swear to you, at some point I go, he probably recognized me. And the only reason that I discounted that was the distance was so great that he couldn't possibly have seen. Let's say he hates me. For whatever reason, he couldn't have figured out that it was me from that distance.
Right, you're right.
And as we got closer and closer, the flip-off became more profound. Like, he's really, adamant that I needed to be flipped off, right? And, again, let me just reiterate, I'm okay with it if I've done something to bring that upon me, but I didn't.
You did nothing.
All I was doing was going home. That's it.
I don't understand that.
I don't get it at all.
You need a reason for the flip-off.
I swear to you, as crazy as this will sound, I considered it at one point because there was, you know, on that part of Clark, there's plenty of places to turn around. I thought, I just want to catch up to him and go,
what's your deal?
Please explain to me. I get it. You flipped me. It's something about me
or my car.
You
sure it was for you?
There was no other car. There was a car way behind me, but no.
Maybe it was Roe. And it was meant for Roe.
let's go with that. I'm much more comfortable thinking that that's what happened. But honestly, like at some point, I go, I should turn around and catch up with him
to just know what's
right,
up.
Right. You. I get it. You're not happy with me. That's fine.
That's weird for
Why?
You. Because for me, you know, I want everybody to like me. So yeah. If I don't get like a warm, welcoming hello, I will circle back and go.
Right.
So you having a good? I mean, I need people to like me. You right. usually don't care.
If they do, that's good. Right. And if they don't, I go, oh, stuff happens. That's
but
all right.
But now you get where I'm coming from. You did nothing, and you just want to know why are you doing this to me?
I couldn't. So, right. In my head, I'm going. Maybe at some point, somebody in a similar vehicle to mine, maybe earlier yesterday or even in the past, maybe they cut him off or something.
Or hit him.
And he kept saying, if I ever see that Jeep again, and it wasn't mine because you keep track of the stuff, good and bad, that happens to you. I don't remember ever seeing that guy at all, you know?
You sure you didn't know him?
I don't think so. Like, in my head, I'm like, I know a couple guys that ride their bikes fairly often. It didn't look like anyone I had ever seen before. I mean, my focus was really on his... It was way up in the... It was, like, intense. Like, this is for you, you know?
Maybe he works at a fast food place or a restaurant and delivered something to you one time and you tipped him not well.
I'm a good tipper.
How would he know if... That it
yeah,
was Bill,
I don't know.
Yeah,
that's
it was
so weird.
So far
it had
off.
To be something Bill did.
Hey, Mr. Bicyclist, call us right now.
Please.
Pull over first and 312-981-7200. What did Bill do? He did nothing.
I don't think I did anything. I don't think I did.
You know what we call those guys in my family, the bicyclists that look like they're acting like they're professional cyclists?
What?
Lee Fabbers.
Why?
Lee Fabbers.
Why yeah, Lee Faber?
We've all, you know, there's cyclists in my family. You know, my cousin Christian was in the Tour de France, and we have a lot of cyclists. I don't know. They're like fake cyclists who think they're really good, and I just looked it
they
up.
They flipped you off because of Mary.
And they're
I think
called,
that's
they're
what
really
it was.
Another word for dirty Frenchmen. So I don't know
oh
if you should say that.
I don't know.
Well, we call them that.
You got flipped
family.
Off today. Wait till.
I don't know what his lineage was, Mary. He yeah. may or may not have been French. I don't know.
I don't know.
I do see guys. I mean, I know that there's different levels. You know, if you like something like biking, there's various levels to it. Like when I ride a bike, whatever I'm wearing at the moment, I just get on the bike and ride it. But there are some guys that want to wear clothing that's very aerodynamic.
Oh, they mean business, yeah.
And it looks like I'm riding here now on Clark, but the Tour de France is just moments away if I want it, you know.
Yeah. Which way to the Pyrenees, sir?
He's in the peloton.
Right.
The peloton.
Here's a text. If he's riding against traffic, the bicycle is in the wrong. He was on the opposite side of the street, though,
yes.
So he was riding with traffic
yes.
on the opposite side
yes.
of the street. All right.
Yes.
There's nothing you did.
I don't think so.
Were your brights on? It was during
the daytime,
so no one would
no
know.
Brights.
He was a one-fingered man and wanted you to know, hey, look at me, I only have one finger.
And I'm able to ride a bike despite this. I like that idea.
Maybe, right. Bill, he just had a cramp in his hand.
All right. I will accept that. I can't tell you how long, like, all right, obviously the rest of the ride home, and then I'm mad at myself, like, why didn't I turn around? But then that would have been crazy.
That could have gotten really bad.
That could have ended poorly.
That would have violated your flip rule.
Yes.
That was an escort. Yes.
You move along,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I know, see, you're questioning what could you have possibly done? I didn't even think that he listens. If he flipped you off, imagine what he'd do to me.
But, yes.
You're the nice one.
But let's, right. But let's say he just despises the show and me and everything about it. There's no way in the world he could have told at that distance that it was me.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
I agree.
Maybe, you know, somebody texted in a picture of a guy from ABBA the other day who looks a bit like me. Maybe he thought I was that guy.
And he didn't like ABBA.
He hates ABBA. So maybe that's what it is.
You've been thinking about this all night,
haven't you? Stop! I mean, he really, in the history of flip-offs, this guy not only won, he won huge, because normally if somebody flips you off, you spend a minute going, whatever. I've now spent 20 hours thinking, what did I do?
312 wants to know, did he take his hand down right after he passed you?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
I saw that in the rearview mirror. I watched that happen in the rearview mirror. His goal was from 300 yards out to flip me off. I mean, and he won. He absolutely won.
Bill, he thinks you're number one. That's what he was doing.
I hope so. I like that one the most. Yeah, I am number one.
Well, if someone knows or if this person is listening, please tell us what your beef is with Bill.
Just tell me what I did. I'd be okay with it. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show coming. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy, at some point today, I want to make good. There's obviously somebody out there who has it in for me, so I want to make good. So if it's okay with you, I think we should give away some Night Ranger tickets.
All right. You want to do that now?
Yeah. You want to do it right now? Let's do it right now.
Are you hoping this guy calls and you can win him back?
Yeah. That's my goal. Is that too much to ask?
I know how it bugs you, though. I'm telling you, I really need people to like me. If I've done something wrong to you, I can understand where you would be mad at me or not like me. You did nothing.
It's not that he flipped me off that bothers me. It's the mystery of it that bothers me. If he had somehow gotten me some sort of word as to why he was upset with me, I would deal with it. But I don't know what went on.
All right, well, let's talk to Jim, and then sometime before the news, we'll give away some Night Ranger tickets.
Motorin.
He was Motorin.
He was, wasn't he? Yes.
I might have hit the wrong phone. Hang on. Let's try this. Hi, Jim. You had a similar story?
Yeah, you know what? Bill did nothing wrong. First of all, I love your guys' show, but Bill did nothing wrong. I've been dealing with these idiot professional bike riders for years. I'm a casual bike rider, but they speed down these bike lanes like it's their own private motorway. They don't stop at stop signs. They flip off people when the motorist was in the right of way. They have been driving me crazy for years. So, Bill, you did nothing wrong. Just write him off as a jerk.
All right. I think you're right. I hope you're right, Jim. Thank you.
Have a good day.
I'm so careful. You know, most of Evanston now has bike lanes. Like, there was a time years ago where if you were riding a bike on the streets of Evanston, good luck to you, because somebody was going to hit you. But now there's special lanes. They're very narrow, but they're there. I'm so careful at all times. I don't want to hit a biker.
See, now I don't want everybody to bash bikers because, like all groups, there are jerky bike riders and there are nice ones.
And it's me a lot of that. I ride my bike quite a bit now.
On the street or still on the sidewalk?
No, on the...
Both. Somebody has texted, he was indicating the IQ of the average Chicago bicycle rider. That's not nice, people. I will say that I have seen bike riders who will challenge you for like rules of the road, and they're not adhering to them.
Right.
Here's a little secret. I have a whole car covering me. You have a helmet.
Right.
I would be very super careful if I was riding. I wouldn't ride my bike on the city street. No way.
I don't think I would either. It's too dangerous.
It is too dangerous.
Yep.
Well, I'm sorry this happened. Maybe we'll get to the bottom of it.
I hope so.
We're on till noon, and then you can also join us on the stream, Mr. Bike Rider. Because I understand where you're coming from.
It's just mysterious.
I know. Right. I get it. The not knowing is what's killing you.
Yeah, that's the worst part.
Well, we have a pair of tickets to the 35th anniversary tour of Night Ranger. They will play all their hits, plus deep cuts.
Hmm.
I thought it was a full concert of Sister Christian.
Need stitches for that.
So deep you'll need stitches.
Yeah.
It's happening Friday, August 17th at a great venue, Silver Creek Event Center at Four Winds Casino, New Buffalo. I love New Buffalo. Tickets are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com, Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. Or just call us now. What number do you want to do?
11.
It goes to 11.
Mm-hmm.
312-981-7200. Jasmine, the 11th caller, will walk away with the Night Ranger tickets.
Deep cuts, Wendy.
Yeah, I got to look into that. Although, what is a deep cut now? There's a satellite station called Deep Cuts.
Yeah.
And you hear something like Freebird on it. How is that a deep cut?
I think the true definition of it is the stuff that rarely, if ever, got played, right?
Yes.
Stuff that they recorded, but for one reason or another...
It wasn't a hit.
Well, it was on the album, but it wasn't released as a single.
Right.
Yeah.
Freebird is not a deep cut.
No, that shouldn't be on there.
While in L.A., I was listening to the radio out there, and KLOS is a pretty legendary rock radio station.
Yes.
And they have Steve Jones from The Clash, Jonesy's Jukebox, who works in the morning. And that was pretty entertaining.
Solid morning show.
Just music, not a lot of wacky DJ-ness. But there was...
I'm out. That's the only reason I listen.
There was an evening guy.
Yeah.
Oh, Jasmine, who's the winner? Who was caller number 11?
Patty from Des Plaines won.
Well deserved.
She's going to see, she's going to motor over to Four Winds Casino.
And gauze, Patty, because there's going to be some deep cuts.
Silver Creek Event Center, Night Ranger tickets. It's the 35th anniversary.
I practiced the butterfly bandage before I go.
To be safe. That's true.
We have more Night Ranger tickets to give away. It'll be a good show. I like these classic rock bands. So the evening guy at KLOS, and I have to find out his name because I really would like to have him on the air. He did something that is absolutely 100% wrong in the world of rock radio.
What did he do?
I'm serious. This drove everyone in our car, me, Jimmy Mack, Dylan, and Michael. We were staring at the radio in disbelief. It was in the middle of, it was a Zeppelin song from In Through the Outdoor. I think it was Fool in the Rain.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of the song, first of all, this guy sounded like Mole Man from The Simpsons. He had a voice like this.
Hans Moleman?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's who he sounded like. So imagine that voice, first of all.
All right. Pretty voice for the radio.
Yes.
Great.
And every word sounded like he was straining to get it out. And then in the middle of a Jimmy Page guitar solo, he cracks his mic and says, check out the tone on that guitar.
In the middle of the song?
In the middle of the song.
No, you can't do that.
You don't interrupt a rock and roll classic when it's on the air.
Right. I don't even like when there's some talk up to a song.
I don't either.
It's ending. You got to play the song out and then chat it up.
I know. And then he was trying to hit the post where you talk over the intro of a song, and he missed it every time. There was Riders on the Storm by The Doors, which sounds starts out with all these sound effects of lightning and thunder and rain.
Yeah.
And then Ray Manzarek's keyboard kicks in, and he's talking, and then he's like, here are The Doors, KLOS. And then he comes back on, and he goes, when is this guy going to start singing? It wasn't funny.
Oh, no.
Hey, you got to break through.
Oh, no.
It's and you said KLOS FM.
Yep.
Yeah, they're huge. And you said you wanted to have him on?
I want to have him on and reprimand him.
Oh, no.
You don't do that.
Jasmine, tell him that in the pitch. Say, Bill Money want to have you on and yell at you.
I'm looking at their schedule, and it just says the...
at evenings. It was like somewhere between 9 and 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just call it the Rock of Southern California. They don't have
anyone can host
to...
If you're in the area, you
maybe it was Mole Man.
Might have been. It might have been.
He doesn't know radio.
I guess not. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. Steve, thanks. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. You can call us or text us at 312-981-7200 at any point during the show. Quick congratulations to the city of Chicago, Wendy, because for the third year in a row, we are the most rat-infested city in America.
And bedbugs?
Yeah, I think we
yeah,
have more
baby.
Rats.
High five
and
me.
More bedbugs. That's great news. Good for tourism.
I don't believe that.
That we have more rats or bedbugs or what?
I don't believe either. Everybody blames Chicago for everything. I'm sure New York has a lot of rats, too.
Well, New York has the reputation, and I got to be honest with you, I'm not in New York a lot. I only go once or twice a year, but it's not uncommon to see a rat just strolling down the street in New York, shopping, sometimes shopping. they have
wearing
this thing
a little tank top.
Yeah, a tank top that says something pithy on it. New York is built differently in that we have alleyways here in Chicago, but in New York, their garbage goes in the front of whatever business or apartment or home you have. They just bring the garbage out. Like late at night when you're strolling around, you just see piles of garbage.
Well, then there has to be a ton of rats right out in front for everybody to see.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I have, all right, last year when we went, I didn't eat at this restaurant, but my wife and both daughters were eating at this outdoor restaurant where rats were just everywhere. They just said, and the customers just accepted it. They go, well, that's what you get when you eat here. You're going to see a lot of rats just walking around this outdoor restaurant. And I go, why did you stay there? I couldn't have eaten.
Well, they weren't inside, hopefully. But
no, they were outside.
But see, if they're outside, they want to get in the kitchen, too. They're hungry. They're going for food.
Well, you'd see people, I've seen this in New York twice, where somebody will take, like, breadcrumbs or something and throw them. You know, it's like, you know, fun for them somehow to feed
the
rat.
They're not pigeons.
No, they're not pigeons.
Although people say pigeons are rats with wings.
Yeah, yeah. But here in Chicago, I mean, I get it, and I have seen my share of rats around Chicago, but it's not like you can't get from point A to point B without, you know, maneuvering around rats. It's not like that.
No, they make it sound like, you know, Willard is happening here in the city.
I know.
And, I mean, I worked overnights for a while, as did you.
Mm-hmm.
I saw rats occasionally, but it wasn't like every night I was walking from my car to the radio station I saw a rat. It was very infrequent.
Every now and then.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Although that was like 20 years ago.
I would see them primarily in alleyways. I saw some large ones. I mean, there used to be stories where you go, you'd see the rats the size of dogs, and you go, there's not rats that big. I saw rats the size of small dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's very jarring.
The worst is in the winter when you see like a frozen one.
Frozen rat. Ugh.
That was disturbing to me.
Ugh. Here's the story out of MSN. No one is going to be bragging about taking the number one spot for the most rat-infested city. The rodents can squeeze or chew their way through just about anything. We know what you're thinking. You want to stay far, far away from these nasty creatures, and the city you will want to be the furthest away from is Chicago. For the third year in a row, Chicago has topped the list of the most rat-infested cities. This is according to Orkin. The Windy City, as we like to call it here in Chicago. I'm always calling it
the Windy City. When's the last time you ever said Windy City?
I've never said it once in my life, unless I'm reading it out of a
story. What about Chi-Town?
That I say all the time. I love to call it Chi-Town. The Windy City had the highest number of rodent treatments
well,
in both residual...
That doesn't mean that they have the most rats. We're just more conscientious and want to alleviate the problem before it happens.
But I don't think anybody takes a preemptive strike. You wait until there's evidence that there's a rat in or around your home, and that's when you call Orkin, isn't it, usually?
Yeah, we had mice, and we called a pet service. I guess pet destroyer, whatever it is, pet control.
I think it's pest, actually. I think
I'm sorry, yes.
We refer to our dogs as pets and our mice as pests.
I had a hamster. It was close enough. And we called a pest service, and we just do it all the time now because I never want to have mice in my house again.
I've had mice in apartments twice. A rat would make me move that day. I would just move whatever I had. I would just leave it there and move. I couldn't live with a rat in the house. Could you?
God, no.
A mouse is bad enough.
And the mice were kind of cute, I got to tell you, but they move so quickly that you truly say eek when you see it. It's just, oh.
Right.
And you're not scared of them because you're way bigger. They're probably more scared of you.
But you're way bigger than a rat, too. But the rat is just, oh.
They'll eat you if you, like, tripped and fell. They would eat your face.
A rat would?
Yeah, a mouse wouldn't.
No.
It would just take the snack out of your pocket.
I believe a cat would also do that.
No.
You don't think a cat would do that?
Not unless they ran out of food.
I think a cat gives you an hour and they go, oh, I'm going to finish this guy off. I don't need this guy. The Windy City had the highest number of rodent treatments in both residential and commercial properties. Hey, we won both categories. Whee! This took place from September of 2014 through September of 2017. Rodents invade 21 million homes every winter. So even if you live on the West Coast, which they put in brackets, is far away from Chicago. Thanks for pointing that out. Oh, yeah, I guess it would be. It's way over there. Yeah. Your city probably isn't completely rat-free. The other rattiest cities that made up the top five are New York, which probably upset them because they're very competitive there.
Mm-hmm.
Probably were very upset about this news. Then Los Angeles.
Los Angeles has rats?
Number three. Yeah. Real tan ones.
Do they get plastic surgery?
They get plastic surgery and they work out and they all have a development deal. Every rat in Los Angeles is working on something with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Is that where Ratatouille's from, LA?
Yes. Hmm. Yes. Number four, the San Francisco through Oakland area.
Really?
And then number five, Washington, D.C.
Political rats.
Add your own venom to that if you want to.
I think this says nothing, and I'm not going to take the title.
Well, it's when you hear this, if you've lived somewhere else, you go, oh, if I went to Chicago, everywhere I look, I'd see rats. And it's not, I mean, really.
It isn't like that.
It's not like that. But it is disconcerting when you see them. When I was doing overnights here, the woman who did news said that, boy, every night when I go to my car, I see a rat. And I go, really? Because I've been here almost a year and I haven't seen one once. From the time we had that conversation, every week then I saw at least one or two or three. I never
a week, not a day.
No, but she maintained every night when she went to her car, she saw at least one.
So do you look for, because as much as they freak me out a little bit, I'm drawn to trying to find them.
Why, Steve?
You don't try to find them?
No, they freak me out.
So you don't look for them?
I'm a suburbanite. I never saw a rat until I started working in Chicago. I swear to God, we have raccoons. Yeah. We have those ugly opossums. God love them, but boy, they're ugly.
Yeah. Hideous.
Even the babies. What baby do you know that's ugly besides an opossum?
I have a list in my wallet. I'll get you.
Remember, yeah, I don't seek them out.
At the Trib Tower, there were rat traps that were like gigantic.
Yeah. Well, that's why you didn't
see them. On the side dock. And then nothing against the Chicago Theater, but if you walked in that alley, they had those giant rat boxes all over the alley at the Chicago Theater.
See, I'm in a quandary when there's a suburban restaurant that I go to, and I'm not going to name it because it has nothing to do with this.
I'm also not going to say Chicago Theater when I tell the story on the air.
Well, there's a big, I know what a big rat poison box looks like because we have the smaller mice ones in our basement. So I know what it's like, a triangular thing, and there's poison in it, and I know it's bad, but I'm not sharing my house with a mouse. I'm not.
Yeah.
Dr. Seuss just called. But so I go to this restaurant, and I come in the back way, and I see this giant rat poison triangular thing, and half of me goes, good, they're taking care of it. And the second thought in my head is, why am I eating here?
Yeah, but see, what was the basis for this study was the number of calls for
treatment. Yes.
So in other words, you might say Chicagoans are the most proactive when it comes to getting rid of their pests.
That's Wendy's argument was exactly that.
And, you know, they're everywhere. I was at a restaurant once and saw a mouse run across the floor.
Yes.
You didn't leave?
Well, it was already poisoned, like it was kind of drugged, so I got up to try to kick it. And
well, you did not. Now you're kidding.
No, it was already moving slowly.
So you kicked it?
Tried to kick it back toward the kitchen or somewhere out of my
room. Okay, yeah. Jeffrey Dahmer.
Wow.
My God.
No, but the point is, they're everywhere.
It's impossible to be totally mouse or rat free. Right.
I was in a movie theater, and I won't name the theater because it's changed hands many times and isn't even a movie theater anymore. To see The Prince of Tides, which would that have been the 80s or 90s?
Yes.
And there were I've said this story before, but there were only probably five people in the theater.
Did you go by yourself?
No, I went with a girl, and we could hear the rats rustling through the popcorn.
Oh, my God. That's a nice date you took around.
Oh, no.
They were pushing, like, the popcorn boxes under our feet, you know, under the seats. So we were watching with our feet up on the row ahead of us, and you could hear them scurrying.
Were you shaking in your members only jacket?
It was a good looking jacket,
Steve.
They were good looking.
To their credit, they do love Barbra Streisand movies.
Right.
I don't know what it is about Barbra Streisand.
I thought it was Nick Nolte.
No, they're okay with Nick Nolte, but they love Streisand.
So we ended up leaving though about half.
Oh, you have to.
Oh, the movie wasn't that good.
When
was
you
it?
Can hear them rustling. No, it's a good movie. It's fine. Again, I will not say the name of the restaurant, but it's an extremely recognizable restaurant chain, and there's one on Michigan Avenue. And one night when we were done with the night show at the Loop, Terry came to pick me up, and we went into this restaurant. While we're waiting for a table, not just an average-sized rat, but a rat that I would say in my head is 2 to 3 times the size of a rat, just walks casually as though it belonged there, just down the center aisle to where near where we were standing. And my wife and I went backwards. And then I said to the hostess, you saw that, right? And she goes, happens all the time. What are you going to do? Eat somewhere else. That's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to hear no one. That happens all the time here. Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you, but I don't think we're number one. But I don't know. Tom works for the city, and he wants to talk about the rat problem. Can we take a quick break?
A quick break, and then we'll find out what's behind this. Why are we the rattiest city in America? It's Bill.
You dirty rat.
It's WGN. Thanks, Wendy. For the third year in a row, Chicago, has been named the rattiest city in America. Orkin does a survey every year to see how many businesses and homes ask for their service to get rid of rats. And we are by far number one. Congratulations, everybody.
I'm not buying it.
You don't believe it.
Although, Tom, you work for the city. Tom, not his real name, just to protect you. There's a big rat problem here.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. They are so disrespectful.
Can the rats?
Yeah, the rats are disrespectful. How come?
They're disrespectful because they come out while you're talking. You can be the north side is the worst. The north side is the worst. These rats at Lincoln Park, Rogers Park, they're just come out all over. Especially you can see like multi-million-dollar houses. And they have a rat problem.
Tom, seriously? I've said this before. Wendy and I have discussed this before. And I said, it seemed like when I was a kid, animals would stay away from you. But now those days are gone. Like in broad daylight, an animal will just come right at you.
That's why I say they're disrespectful. They walk right up on you.
Yeah, but we're disrespectful because we're building things all the time and we're disrupting the earth. And then they don't have any place to hang out. So they have to move around to find another location.
Yeah, I understand that, but... You walk anywhere on the north side, you're going to see rats at night.
They'll be there. Night,
and they're there.
Yeah. Like, every day do you see rats?
There's some big as cats. I mean, it's some big rats out here.
Tom,
really big.
You work nights. Do you see at least one rat every single night?
Some rats. No, not one. Some.
Every night?
Every night. Every night.
So what are we doing, Tom? What is it about this city that is so conducive to rats? Why are we the worst?
Well, I see that there's a lot of restaurants and bars on the north side. South side is rats. There's a rat problem. There's not too many rats on the south side or the west side. It's not enough buildings, I guess. But on the north side, they cross the street. I think they teach their kids how to cross the street because they look both ways.
I mean, that is so funny.
Huh? I say one that took a big slice of pizza and just mauled it. I mean, the rats are just there. We got a real rat problem in Chicago.
Come on, you know how excited you get when somebody gives you free pizza. Imagine that little rat.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't no little. It wasn't little. This thing was. I'm telling you, walk Clark Street at night, and I guarantee you.
I don't do that anymore. I got a real job.
Oh no! Sorry, you had to hear that, Tom.
Yeah.
Tom, be careful out there. All right.
All right.
Take it easy.
Here's the rat eating pizza. Are there anchovies on this? Seriously, you put anchovies on this? Ugh. Thanks, but no thanks.
Nobody likes anchovies. Not even rats.
Not even rats. By the way, the line, you dirty rat, the James Cagney line, not actually said in any James Cagney movie. You know how impressionists, like if you were doing a Tony Curtis impression, or a Cary Grant, you go, Judy. Or play it again, Sam, that was never a line.
Or frankly, my dear, yeah, I don't give a damn.
No, that one's legit.
I thought it was a little different. Because we all have, you know, it's like the game of telephone. Where
you change it just enough. He talked about rats in at least one or two movies, but he never said the line, you dirty rat. That's just something impressionists came up with.
How come?
I don't know.
That's legendary.
Blame Frank Gorshin. Don't blame me.
He's no longer with us.
No, I know. All right, we must take a break. A quick break, then some news, then Dane Neal joins us for some ice cream talk. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Dane Neal will stop by. We're going to talk about one of your favorite things.
Ice cream. Love it.
It's all right.
It's all right. It's ice cream, Wendy.
I'd rather have a taco.
An ice cream taco.
They make those. The Choco Taco.
Yeah, I like that.
All right. And we'll talk about Shark Week at the Shed coming up. But right now at 11 o'clock, I wanted to let you know the Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. If you have a smart speaker, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Boy, this reminds me of two creepy things.
Can either of them be said on the air?
All right, three things, but two of them can.
The dilly bar? No.
Yeah,
clowns?
Yes.
And the ice cream truck.
Yeah. For some reason, this song is the one that many ice cream trucks played. I don't know why.
Is this Turkey in the Straw or
no? Yeah.
I don't know. This is right off the hits, the greatest hits of the Ice Cream Man
right.
album.
It's way up there.
And you wonder if there's, I don't want to say a support group, but like some kind of governing body of the Ice Cream Man where they say, you know, trends, you're like, hey, this music's really drawing them in. Or they've got like the charts and the graphs and the schematics. But when you get to meet your local Ice Cream Man, you just think that's not possible. The thought process doesn't go further than just making your summer day better.
That song was played, all right, I grew up in Oak Forest, and one of the Ice Cream Men always played that song. But then in between, like as that song came to an end, the truck would say this in its recording. It would be that song, and then, hi! And then it would play that again and go, hi! Just like a weird, high-pitched, hi. Why? I don't know what was behind that. That would you
hear little return highs from different streets and blocks around the neighborhood?
No. It was just a way of signaling the fact that the Ice Cream Man was coming. That's Dane Neal, by the way, whose voice you hear other than Wendy's and my own, here to talk about ice cream, what I consider to be one of the finest foods, if not the best food of all time. But you and Wendy don't agree with me.
I don't hate it. I'm just not the hugest fan, but no. I'm out of step Charlie here because, Bill, you're right. You know, Americans eat more and enjoy more ice cream than any other country in the world. And is that because we've got first world problems, like how to keep our, you know, chunky monkey cold, you know, as opposed to trying to avoid malaria? Who knows, right?
We don't know.
Either way, we eat a lot of ice cream, and this is National Ice Cream Month. You figure what better month than July when it's, I think, maybe most appreciated.
Right. Well said.
Really have to eat ice cream in the summer? Because it's not really refreshing to me.
No?
I always need a glass of water afterwards. It doesn't...
So do what? How come? Just to get rid of the taste of that awful ice creamy taste?
It's awful, delicious ice cream.
It's all, like, creamy and stuff, so it's not like it's thirst-quenching.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're going to love ice cream, you can love it in the winter, too.
Absolutely.
Or you could despise it in the winter, Wendy. That's always... You notice how Wendy mentions it, and she mentions, like, you know, that horrible creamy...
I didn't say that. Bill said that.
Who needs that in your mouth?
They say that you can enjoy it year-round, obviously, and here in Chicago, certainly big, huge. Huge fans of the ice cream world. They say around the country, high 80s, maybe low 90s, as far as the percentage of people that always, 365 days a year, have ice cream in their freezer. So everybody always has some on hand.
Yeah.
We have it because the boys like it.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim likes it. It could sit there till the...
Really?
You wouldn't need it. But, you know, like ice cream is okay if you're going the extra step to have like a sundae or something with hot fudge or turtle sundae. That to me is a delicacy, but
just not on its own.
Although
it doesn't do it for
I got to get out to Rainbow Cone. That's one that I don't usually like my flavors to mix, but there's a magical thing going on there.
They do it well, don't they?
Yeah.
On the history side, you look at some of that history, and it was one of those things that was just for the elite people. It started out some of the first. Kind of documentation on the ice cream side is King Solomon. He was fond of ice drinks during the harvesting, and they would flavor them because they didn't have, you know, chocolate fudge and all that kind of stuff with just
like berries,
honey, and things that would be like kind of pedestrian, but still good.
King Solomon loved a good blackberry smoothie. Dane, did you know that about him?
He did.
He loved them.
He was a big fan. I think he engineered the original Mr. Misty.
Yes, that was his doing. King Solomon.
You know, and then the Roman Empire. We all remember. You know, he's in our kind of Caesar flashcards, Nero Claudius Caesar, and this was 54 to 86 AD. He frequently sent runners into the mountains for snow, which was then flavored with fruits and juices because, you know,
like a snow cone type.
Yeah,
but ice.
You know where Rome is, it's not necessarily, there's not a lot of snow.
Right.
Probably, right? So you had these
Alps.
Well, I'm just saying it would take, this isn't like, you know, delivered to your local grocery store, and they'd have to come back probably under penalty of death. with some delicious.
You got a pizza flavored ice cream for me?
for the emperor. And then Marco Polo came back from the Far East with a recipe closely resembled what is now sherbet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a lot of history there before we got into, you know, kind of the 1700s where people started actually getting to enjoy ice cream on a regular basis. George Washington, founding fathers, you know,
why he had wooden teeth. He ate too much ice cream.
In 1 year alone, and you got to do the exchange rate here, and I'm not an expert on that, but I know it's a lot. $200 worth of ice cream George Washington consumed.
In today's $200 range,
back then,
that's millions of dollars.
It was probably millions
in a year.
Wow,
in 1 year,
that's a lot of ice cream.
Yeah, I'm just saying. You know, these guys.
I don't even spend that now on ice cream in a year.
Well, a lot of people are doing it. And in here, now, as far as like your favorite places to go, you mentioned Rainbow Cone. It is one of the top 20 places in Chicago, in the Chicagoland area. A lot of people, we could open it up, 312-981-7200. If people have any places that they would suggest, Dairy Queens, you know, if you're driving
Dairy
down-
Queen, we've discussed this, Wendy and I, not technically ice cream.
I don't care. I like it.
It's I love it, too. I love Dairy Queen.
The consistency is way better than ice cream, in my opinion.
I mean, it's different.
Smoother.
It's ice milk, essentially, is what you're getting at Dairy Queen. They even call it frozen dairy.
I hear Orion calling in.
It's not I know.
I mean, because he's always right there.
Peanut Buster Parfait. And we never grew up near a Dairy Queen.
Oh, you didn't?
We didn't.
No.
We had Tasty Cone,
Freeze,
the Snowflake Drive-In. Highland Queen is out near me.
Like a Dog and Suds would do like a decent Sunday, and you mentioned liking some of those other things. As it first came up, it was so good, and anything that's really good is going to have a little bit of backlash. You know, sometimes, at least back in the day, from like, let's say the religious community said, this is just too good. It's sinfully good, right? Because they had the soda jerks. That was a whole nother.
Yeah.
You had a good kind of pull method, and you could make some tasty treats. So they started doing Sundays, and today is actually National Hot Fudge Sundae Day.
I'm having one tonight.
Yeah, and so they just took the carbonated, you know, waters out of it, and so they made it into something that was probably actually better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, we will discuss ice cream at greater length next. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you by text or by phone, 312-981-7200. Dane Neal's our guest. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dane Neal's here, and we're talking about ice cream.
And what? Oh, I had the wrong mic on. I'm sorry. There you go.
You will not be silenced.
I will not.
You will not be silenced. Talk about some strange flavors. You want to do that?
Well, okay, yeah. So we've got some great, crazy flavors in there. They're hoping to draw in some of the reluctant enthusiasts, kind of like myself, right? You know, where if you could bring in some principles on the culinary side or maybe just some odd flavors that you know people like, they'll kind of warm up to, no pun intended, the ice cream situation. So you've got some like in Florida, the Red Hot Lover is...
named after Bill.
Mm-hmm. Named after... There is a photo of him in there.
I make myself laugh on that.
It's a light banana ice cream mixed with, and this is where... And you mentioned it, like this is something Bill would absolutely love, fiery Red Hots.
Yes.
With banana? That doesn't go well.
You don't think so? Yeah. Cinnamon and banana?
You give it a try.
That would be all right.
It's endorsed by Bill, at least in picture form.
Sit the Red Hot Lover.
And then you've got one coming up in Colorado. You've got the goat cheese beet swirl. Roasted beets.
I love beets, but not an ice cream.
And then, well, you think beets. You're thinking, geez, what could make it better? A thick and tangy goat cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That should be called Beets Me.
And then something that I think is kind of boring. I'm not the hugest sweet corn... I mean, I like it a little bit. You know,
I only like me, Rye.
Okay, there you go. So we're and that makes a lot of sense. Is there in Arizona the sweet corn ice cream at Sweet Republic in Scottsdale? It's corn on the cob. It's cornbread into a frozen dessert.
Why?
So they take the
no.
You think right? These seem like kind of a stretch here.
Mm-mm.
So this one's close, worth one of those road trips, and we'll talk about this on Saturday. Is the Supermen at Valpo Velvet in Valparaiso? It's the Blue Moon. It's a Midwest flavor that tastes like Fruit Loops, cherry, and lemon bursts.
Love Blue Moon.
Is it good? Okay,
yeah,
sweet.
Yeah.
And then Bill, who loves to go to Maine for every reason, right? To you know, to fish and to be at one with nature and enjoy the surf and the people.
He had a fish lobster off his plate.
Right. Okay. I don't fish, but you painted a very beautiful picture, Dave.
Where you enjoy the company of those who fish.
Yeah, that's how it
that's
is.
Like the
you landlubber.
Well, think about it. The Gorton's Fishermen. Is there like a boyhood home of the Gorton's Fishermen?
Yeah.
Place there?
Yeah.
You go there?
Yeah, I go there every year.
You get like your own.
I get all misty.
Pants, the yellow rubber pants. Yep. Everybody has us. Lobster at Ben and Bill's. No relation?
No.
Chocolate Emporium in Bar Harbor, Maine. And we know this sounds absolutely insane, but butter-infused ice cream, that doesn't sound terrible, right?
Well, butter pecan is kind of like
butter.
Topped with cooked lobster.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, though? Because these are things people like. If you throw bacon in ice cream, it seems great.
Several places in Maine have... I was there 3 weeks ago, and when I came back, I told the story. I saw it in a couple places, and I love lobster and I love ice cream, but I just don't know that that's a good blend for me.
It doesn't seem... There are things...
It doesn't seem
even
right.
Even bacon and ice cream really shouldn't go there.
Yeah. When my wife's mother was a kid, they didn't let her go grocery shopping with the family for no particular reason. It's just not something she did. She was a kid, and they didn't need to bring her to the store. She found out when she was in her early 20s that there was flavors of ice cream other than vanilla. Because her mom and dad would only get vanilla ice cream. That was it.
Oh, wow.
So, people were scared to try new flavors, I guess, don't you think?
Well, even when we were kids, there were maybe a dozen flavors of ice cream. But now if you go to Jewel or any, you know, any grocery store, Mariano's, go through the ice cream department. There's 65 or 70 flavors.
There's a bunch of flavors. And Wendy, I think it's understood, and maybe it's something inherent to the human condition, this, that fear of new flavors or fear of ice cream in general. Just like, Bill, I think even if you've never been in the presence of a black mamba, yes, you know, or some kind of poisonous viper or snake, yes, or spider, like, I think naturally, as a human,
be some trepidation. You're afraid, right?
Well, here's the reason why. Milk was not pasteurized in the U.S. until the 1890s, which meant any dairy product was potentially laced with bacteria that caused scarlet fever, diphtheria, and bovine tuberculosis. So ice cream poisonings were a common event and were regularly reported in the news. So even though people liked ice cream,
they died from it.
Just like, you know, eating the blowfish or something like that. You know, you were really taking your...
Right.
Taking your...
Can I have two scoops of bovine, what was it, tuberculosis?
A little side of diphtheria, you know, a sprinkle of that on the... So here's the thing. 1904 World Fair, St. Louis. This is where, and I don't know why we don't have the World's Fair anymore. Do we, Bill, or is it just not publicized enough?
I don't think... No one wants to talk
about
it.
10 guys in a tilt-a-whirl now.
It still goes on. It gets no publicity.
It used to be a big deal. And that's where they invented the ice cream cone, which was like a kind of a waffle cone, which made it portable, which made it doable.
And everyone had to do it in a cup before that? Is that how you got your ice cream?
I don't even have cups. Yeah, some kind of wooden bowl or eat it off of a rock. Who knows?
That's how they did it back then, Dave.
So the first ice cream truck, and this is, I think, a profession that needs, it's one of those things that I think we've all either experienced. Some of us have kind of a romantic attachment with the whole ice cream man situation.
Sure.
Not necessarily like literally, but I'm just saying just that childhood kind
of
affinity.
What a way to make a living, right?
Yeah, the first ice cream truck was credited to Harry Burt of Youngstown, Ohio, and he created the Good Humor brand. You mentioned, right, we can all in our mind, at least I can,
sure,
right? See that guy in the...
You know, although I still don't understand why they call it that. It's not like they told you a joke before you got your ice cream. It's not Good Humor. How about Tasty Man or
Tasty
something?
Tasty Man.
Or...
Well,
you know,
remember, like, did you have a truck by you called Mr. Softy with a guy whose head was part human and half ice cream cone?
Would you rather be Good Humor or Mr. Softy?
Mr. Softy is a bad name for anything.
But that was
Wendy.
Soft Serve. There wasn't one. We always had the Good Humor man.
Yeah.
And he was always dressed up in the nice white, you know, like...
Sparkly white.
Yeah, and with that cool change belt.
Yeah. And sometimes he'd say this, what can I do you for?
Yeah.
And I'd go, well, that's cool. He took the sentence and inverted it.
Kenny Lombard, before he got into his broadcasting career, spent some time as a Good Humor man. He had come up with the first idea to take and make an ice cream on a stick, like an ice cream, I guess it would be a bar, right?
Yeah,
you know, had the wooden
bar
stick in the back and made it again portable. He called it the ice cream sucker. It was easy to clean. It was easy to eat. It was clean, right? Which gave him the idea to sell it directly from his truck to consumers. And so then of course, Mr. Softy came up a little bit later in Philadelphia.
Mr. Softy.
So from that beginning, we end up with what we have on the streets. And we mentioned in some places it's been outlawed for a variety of reasons.
Why would you outlaw an ice cream truck?
Some of them look suspect, I got to tell you. It looks like they pull it out of their garage, go pick up some ice cream sandwiches and sell them.
The music isn't even peppy. It seems like it's kind of...
Right. Ding, ding, ding. It's nightmarish.
But it still works to this day. Like, my kids haven't had anywhere near the amount of exposure. They hear that, and there's something... I think we should go back. We all remember, you guys remember, it's your DJ days, you know, the whole, like, Judas Priest, what's being said if you play it backwards.
Right.
I'm wondering, because... there's some kind of thing that is
subliminal,
this, like,
you're thinking?
Piper. Well, they don't even know. They know that, like, get up, you know, ask you for money.
Right.
These are the steps, right?
Right.
Rise up, ask you for money, and then go tearing off towards wherever this sound is.
Yeah.
Didn't you do that? Because we
did. I still do that.
Of course, but I can't put my finger on exactly why, because I felt like maybe I did it because the kids in the neighborhood, oh, come on, Dan, let's go. Let's go get some ice cream. But my kids don't have that same, they're just not as prevalent where we are, and so I don't know where, but they seem to know, like, naturally, you know, to get up and go chasing after it. Some of the reasons that, at least on paper, that they've been outlawed is that it's kind of dangerous. You've got somebody that's just driving while kids are, you know, just crazed chasing after
it. Right.
There's been opportunities for injuries. There's been times where kids have been, like, run over, have been, like, killed, have been, you know, by the ice cream man.
Couple of weeks ago on a Friday, I returned home, and a house across the street and down three had an ice cream truck in their driveway. I didn't know at the time it was a going away party for them, so they hired an ice cream truck for all the people coming to the going away party. But I went up to the guy in the truck and I said, am I dreaming this? I go, I've had this dream so many times.
My house is two doors down.
Somebody's here.
Come on, come to my house. It's more fun. Yeah.
Well, you think with the food trucks, you know, and that whole, you know, phenomenon happening, this would be natural that someone would just kind of maybe do it better or maybe do it in a more. But it seems like, and Wendy, I totally agree, is that when the times that I've seen them over the last few years, It's I don't know, it's some kind of crazy beater thing with stickers peeling off the side.
Sure.
The guy is like right out of central casting from one of those, like, to catch a predator.
Oh, don't.
I don't want to, and I know, but
not all ice cream men are predators.
I'm sure, absolutely not. No, 100%. But it's not even, you know, like maybe the teenager that was having the summer job kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you wonder where it's being regulated. Out in Seattle, it's outlawed, but they don't really enforce it. But for some of the safety reasons, that's one of the reasons why they've kind of limited,
yeah,
you know, because you've just got this guy driving around sort of unregulated,
yeah,
kids swarm in the thing and accidents can happen.
Well, somebody just texted, I gotta share this with you. My folks told us when you heard the music from the ice cream truck, it meant they ran out of ice cream.
Yeah, how about
that's
that?
Genius. Yep.
Very smart.
Yep. Can I give you my top three ice cream places?
Absolutely.
In around Chicago?
Yeah, for sure.
Number one is a place called Lickety Split on Broadway. It's north of the city. It's outstanding. A great old-fashioned ice cream parlor, and they have all kinds of different pop and candy and stuff. It's like going back in time. Number two is Kilwin's Fudge. There's a couple of those locations in and around. They started in Michigan, but they're all around Chicago. Try the double peanut butter pie flavored ice cream or the key lime pie flavored ice cream.
Nice.
Both are incredible. And Wendy, you already know my number one.
Cops Custard
in Milwaukee.
The
best.
Yeah.
The absolute best.
Even Culver's, before they sold out to the Burger World, you know, they were doing the custard.
Andy's is good, too.
Andy's is good. The home of the concrete, you know, thing, right?
Concrete comes from a bunch of places. Ted Drews in St. Louis invented it, but then it's all over the place now. Not that I care too much about ice cream. I just do. I know my ice cream.
There is a place in downtown LaGrange which needs to be mentioned. It's as you mentioned, that old-fashioned place. There's Tate's old-fashioned ice cream. And I have to admit, they have like a freshly made coconut ice cream, which is pretty good. That is the one thing I'll have just a scoop of.
Get out there and enjoy, celebrate, you know, National Ice Cream Month this whole rest of the month. And today, if you can get a Sunday, more power to you. And on this Saturday, I'll be giving some places worthy of a road trip to get some, too.
Excellent. Thanks, Dane. Appreciate it. That's Dane Neal, everybody. A quick break, then some news, then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Sorry, Bill. That was my fault. I just handed you something, and it wasn't an ice cream cone.
Nothing to worry about, Wendy. I can handle
you
this
red one. Hot lover.
The right healthcare matters, Wendy. That's the point I'm trying to make. Riverside Healthcare, the award-winning health system, serves communities just south of the southern suburbs.
I got him all flustered.
Nah, I'm fine.
It's an ice cream flavor.
Yeah, it is. It is. From heart care to neurosurgery to cancer care to orthopedics, Riverside also offers a variety of primary and specialty care providers and locations throughout the region. Riverside offers just the right care for you and your kids and your whole family. When and where you need it most, because convenience does matter as well. Visit riversidehealthcare.org for locations, for services, or to schedule an appointment and more. Riverside Healthcare, putting well within reach.
It is Shark Week. I have been enjoying Shark Week on the Discovery Channel.
Not thrilled with ice cream, but a huge fan of the sharks.
I am really blown away. I mean, I see why people, they're so interesting.
Yeah.
There are so many different kinds. There are glow-in-the-dark fish that I've been...
Glow-in-the-dark fish?
That's not the name of them, but I've been enjoying myself, and Shaquille O'Neal went down into a shark cage, and he called your buddy Kevin Hart for...
Is this true?
Yeah, it didn't really... It was very weird that I was watching it. Shaquille O'Neal and Rob Riggle are out on a boat because he's a former Marine.
Oh, right.
And Shaquille was in a shark cage and something happened. You should watch it. They rerun it a bunch of times. And a lot of shark programming as well. But our own Shedd Aquarium has Shark Week going on, and we're going to find out what's going on there. Well, you know, I just think about this. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we just went to Universal Studios and saw the shark from Jaws, mm-hmm. And then it's Shark Week. I am kind of obsessed with sharks,
Are
I
you?
Understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. It's if only we had an expert nearby to tell us more.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. Stephen Kessel is with us, Director of Marine Research for the Shedd Aquarium here in Chicago. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well, thank you.
Happy Shark Week, Steve.
Happy Shark Week to you too.
Are you watching any? Because I'm really enjoying it.
I watch a little bit of Shark Week.
You live it, though, don't you?
I do, so I get a little bit frustrated when I watch them. It depends on what the messaging of the particular show is. They kind of swing between sensationalism and science, and sometimes they find a happy medium, but it can be quite frustrating sometimes if the messaging's not on point.
Obviously, the Shedd Aquarium does a good job at preserving species and keeping things in their natural habitat. Sharks scare me, but fascinate me, and isn't that kind of the fascination with everyone? Like, they're scary, but they're so cool, man. I can't tell you how cool a shark is.
Yeah, I think a lot of that came from people seeing the movie Jaws. It really turned several generations of people into people who were very afraid of sharks. But with fear comes a morbid fascination, I think. And for me, when I saw Jaws, it was just pure fascination. If you speak to most shark biologists, that's what they'll tell you as well. Jaws was a big inspiration for them.
Do great whites really attack people?
They do sometimes, yeah. They have encounters with people, and there is incidences where great whites will bite people. It's not a common occurrence at all.
It seems like it doesn't happen often, but when it does happen, it seems like it comes in groups for some weird reason. Is it just that the media pays more attention to it once there's one or two?
I think that's one of the factors. Once a shark attack's in the news, they latch onto that and they look for any even quite minor incidences that might occur a bit more frequently than a big, potentially fatal attack. But globally, there's only an average of six fatal attacks globally from sharks per
year. That's it?
That's it, which is really, if you think about how many people are in the water every day, that's nothing.
Right.
I know to remain still and don't thrash around. Is that still good advice if you encounter a shark?
Pretty much any time anyone's in the ocean, there's sharks about. They're encountering sharks, whether they know it or not.
Oh, my God.
And if you think about I said there's six fatalities. There's only an average of around 83 bites at all, unprovoked bites per year. And if you think how many people are in the water every single day, thousands and thousands of people around the world, and there's every time they're in the ocean, there's sharks either right there or nearby.
Oh,
so
that's
just alarming. Do what you're doing in the water. The chances of a shark coming and biting you is so low, it's not something we really have to be worried about.
Remember, Steve, there was advice back after Jaws where they said if a shark does look like it's going to attack you, what you want to do is just punch it square in the middle of the nose. But I don't believe that would help you.
It's that specific act of punching a shark in the nose is maybe not the best advice.
No.
Won't it anger them?
Potentially, we can only pretend to understand what the shark is thinking. But what you want to do if a shark is showing aggression towards you, which again, the chance of that is next to zero for this to happen to you in your lifetime. But if that ever does happen, you do want to be quite confident with that animal. If you can summon the courage to swim towards it, that's going to
swim toward the shark.
Yeah, that's going to tell the shark you're not something that's afraid of it. You're not something that it's going to want to eat. And if you ever get in that situation where it's really bad, I'd actually focus attention around the eyes and the gills because that's a lot more sensitive.
Punch it in the eye.
But
the reality of actually doing that.
You're not going to do it.
But again, let's stress that this is not advice people are going to have to act on.
Right.
The chances are so
far between that this could happen. Is it true that a shark can't? Because we always say, well, sharks would only be in salt water, but that's not always the case, right? You can get a shark in fresh water, can't you?
You can. There's several species of sharks that can move into fresh water and some that can actually live there for their entire life cycle. It's not many. The bull shark is the main one that's quite famous for being able to go into fresh water. There's actually a population of bull sharks in Lake Nicaragua that actually live there their whole life cycle.
But how big do they get, the bull sharks?
Bull sharks can get pretty big. The largest recorded one's about 4 meters, so somewhere in the region of 12 feet.
But oh my God.
When we talk about freshwater bodies here in Chicago, we're thinking about the Great Lakes. That's not possible. It's not possible that there's Great
Lakes. But then, wasn't there a story last year, some shark was in waters that they said, well, you couldn't get a shark in these waters, and it still showed up anyway somewhere in the world?
I think you maybe think that Discovery Channel around Shark Week did a promo where they pretended a bull shark was in Lake Ontario.
Oh, they pretended?
Yes, they put a fake one and put a YouTube video out.
Oh, my God.
It was pretty bad because a lot of people canceled holidays and resorts actually had problems with that. But they did catch a bull shark in Missouri up the Mississippi. So Bull Shark actually made it all the way up to Missouri in the Mississippi.
Had a Cardinals game.
maybe that's in the audience.
Right. Steve Kessel is with us, Director of Marine Research for the Shedd Aquarium. We're going to be talking about the 30th anniversary of Shark Week and what's going on at the Shedd. You can always go to sheddaquarium.org. Bill, I don't remember if you were here the day Steve Grzanich, who does the morning bell at 5 a.m. and on the Steve Cochran show, saw something swimming in the Chicago River. Hmm. And he swore, or the opening bell, I'm sorry, at 5 in the morning, he swore to me that they were otters. And we were looking from up here, 18 floors down to the Chicago River, and the way that they were moving, it looked like a family of otters. And I'm like, there's no way they could live in the Chicago River.
I don't think so.
It turned out that they were fish. I don't know if those are Asian carp, but how big must that thing have been to look like the size of an otter from 18 floors up?
Pretty big. I mean, there's some pretty big fish in the Great Lakes. If you think sturgeon are in there, Lake Sturgeon, yeah. They can get pretty enormous. It could well have been a big species of fish.
Maybe.
It was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, really, from being up here, it really looked like an otter.
Huh.
I thought that was crazy. We're going to talk about what's going on at the Shedd Aquarium. I think we have some shark trivia we're going to get into.
Excellent.
It'll test your knowledge, see how good you guys are.
This will be great.
See how much you've been paying attention with Shark Week.
All right. Oh,
I haven't been paying that. I just ooh and ah. It's like watching fireworks underwater. Those things are so cool. Steve Kessel, Director of Marine Research for the Shedd Aquarium. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.
Yeah, kids in the car? Okay, cover their ears. No, I'm not going to say anything dirty, but it is the last full week of July. School's coming. Dr. Kathy Tynes gets us ready for the fall. Ugh, I had to say it. The fall. School records, school physicals, everything you need to know about your kid's health for school.
Remember the days of the old school, y'all.
Coming up before the Sox game at 7 on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andre Darlis on 720 WGN.
To me, what we really have in common is our love for our communities and how we want to make those communities a better place for the long term. Hi, I'm Peter Steele. I'm the Executive Director for American Cancer Society, and we are a proud partner with Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois. Just to put it in perspective, while we've reduced cancer deaths by 25% since 1950, amazing progress. There's still 60,000 people just in our state of Illinois alone that are going to find out for the first time they've got cancer this year. When Blue Cross Blue Shield says, through it all, they're in this fight together. They're in the trenches with us. It's that perseverance, that relentless pursuit of attacking cancer from every angle is absolutely amazing. And that's exactly what this partnership is about. This is about families. It's about actions. The employees, the leadership, they don't talk it. They show up and they do something about it. They are a role model for all.
Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois, a division of Healthcare Service Corporation, a mutual legal reserve company.
With the recent rainy weather, PermaSeal is working hard to help homeowners across Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana. Boy, my mouth has just finished working for the day.
Did the otters take your script? What
yes.
happened?
They do need your help, though. PermaSeal needs your help. They're hiring in all departments, especially sales, customer service, and installation. They're looking for people with a great work ethic, who have ambition, positive attitude, want to learn new skills, and have a desire to make the world a better, drier place. If this sounds like you, then go to permaseal.net/careers and you can apply today. No experience is needed. PermaSeal will teach you how to become an expert in waterproofing and foundation repair. Their experienced team offers great training, year-round work, tremendous growth opportunities, and a great fun work environment. To apply, go to permaseal.net/careers. If you're looking for a career change or a dry basement, you now know who to call. It's PermaSeal at 800-421-SEAL. That's 800-421-7325, or go to permaseal.net.
Stephen Kessel is here, the Director of Marine Research for the Shedd Aquarium. It is Shark Week. Has Shark Week become too commercial, Steve? You be honest with us.
I think Shark Week is 30 years of Shark Week now, and it's fluctuated a lot between, again, being a bit fear-mongering and being quite scientific and having good conservation measures. But at Shedd Aquarium, Shark Week's always great for us because it really piques people's interest in sharks, and it allows us to educate people and bring them on as advocates for sharks and actually turn their opinions into something quite positive and talk about the plight of sharks on the global scale.
Yeah.
And the new campaign that was kicked off, the conservation campaign, Keep Sharks Swimming, that's what's going on right now?
Yes. So we've been doing, we've established a research program for sharks at Shedd that's a dedicated direct research program, but we're taking it one step further with Keep Sharks Swimming, which where we're moving into policy and advocacy. And within that campaign, if you sign onto the website, go to the Keep Sharks Swimming section, you can actually watch 360-degree videos, virtual reality videos, where you can actually swim along sharks in their natural environment. Mm. But then you can actually, even people here in Chicago can take action to help protect sharks. There's a petition in there, and you can sign onto a letter of support. Our research is based in the Bahamas, and the Bahamas has very progressive shark conservation and management measures in place that are really supporting very rich and plentiful populations. We want people to sign a letter of support that's going to help sustain those policy measures long into the future.
There are sometimes called killing machines, the sharks. Is that what they are essentially? Are they killing machines?
They're a very effective predators. They, you know, typically predate rather than scavenge, so yeah. They do, but what they are predating is fish primarily, depending on the species. There's lots of different species of sharks, but they're very effective predators, and they have a very, very controlling influence over the ocean ecosystems, which, you know, again, thinking about humans, that's very important, because if you have healthy ecosystems, ocean ecosystems, you've got good fisheries, and that's important for global food security. So if you remove the sharks out of those ecosystems, it can really destabilize the whole ecosystem below them,
yeah,
and actually influence our fisheries and the health of our oceans.
Are they becoming extinct? Are there certain types of sharks that are becoming extinct or in danger of that?
Yeah, a recent study in 2014 actually found that 25% of all Chondrichthyan fish species, and Chondrichthyan fish is sharks, skates, and rays, are actually at global threat of extinction.
Really? Mm,
yeah, so it's not every shark. Some shark populations are doing well. There's lots of different shark species and populations, but a big proportion of shark populations are at threat of extinction, and this is largely due to overfishing. It's estimated that we kill around 100 million sharks in commercial fisheries every year.
Yeah. Horrible.
So if you think off about numbers. Six you know, human-related fatalities, yeah, per year for sharks, we're, yeah, killing 100 million sharks.
You better give up that shark tooth necklace.
I'm done.
I can't talk today.
Shark tooth necklace.
The shark tooth necklace. Why do people kill them? Just to mount them on the wall or for those stupid necklaces?
No, the necklace is actually not potentially bad, because sharks actually, you know,
shed
reproduce
their teeth,
so it's possible it was just found.
Yeah.
The reason they're targeted is primarily for the Asian shark fin soup market. And it's a very big demand, very high
shark
demand for shark
soup.
Fins. Shark fins are very valuable, so compared to other fish for fishermen, there's a big incentive for them to catch sharks, because they're going to get a lot of money for those shark fins for the Asian shark fin soup market.
We've gotten all through the interview without any mention of Sharknado at all. Steve, to me, those movies are kind of fakey. What do you think?
They are interesting. Again, they're a little bit cult movies where,
yes,
people,
like,
thankfully,
them,
understand that this is a ludicrous situation,
yes,
but they can be quite entertaining nonetheless.
Okay.
All right. I have learned some things during Shark Week on TV. If you want to learn more, you can always go to the Shedd Aquarium, sheddaquarium.org. A lot of events going on for Shark Week. Jazzin' at the Shedd on Wednesday evenings throughout the summer. This isn't the last one tonight, is it?
No, this is not the last one, but this is a special shark-themed jazzin' for Shark Week. I'll be giving a presentation about shark biology, ecology, and our research programs at Shedd. And then there's other things you can do. You can try our virtual reality headsets, look at some of those videos so you can get that experience of swimming with sharks in the natural
That's
environment.
That's excellent. That's right, great.
Some shark trivia?
Do shark trivia. That
okay.
sounds good.
Well, let's start off a little easy. I've been pushing that there's a lot of shark species. You know, sharks have been on this planet around 450 million years, mm-hmm, and over that time they've evolved into lots of different species of shapes and sizes. Just a rough guess, how many species of sharks do you guys think there are on the
Wendy,
planet?
Wendy, go ahead.
200.
I'm going to say 64.
It's actually over 400 species of shark currently described on this planet. And every year we find about two or three new ones, normally in the deep ocean. So,
what's the smallest one? Are there little tiny sharks?
Yeah, the smallest shark is actually the dwarf lantern shark. And that thing at full size is about 8 inches long.
That's it.
And then compare that to the largest shark species, the whale shark, which is actually the biggest fish in the ocean. That thing can grow in excess of 40 feet long.
40 feet?
I can't even imagine that.
That's too big.
Just to point out that is a filter feeder, so that poses zero risk to
you. So that's bigger than a whale?
Bigger than some species of whale. The biggest organism is always going to be the blue
that's
whale.
That's the biggest.
Yeah.
Right, right.
But the biggest fish, because obviously whales being mammals, the biggest fish is the whale shark, and 40 feet
is
a pretty enormous animal.
That's huge.
So there are some sharks that are vegetarians?
No.
Or do they all eat carnivores?
They're all carnivorous. There's a recent paper came out suggesting one species he's maybe omnivorous, but I personally think it's just incidental.
Right.
Them grabbing seagrass while they're feeding in the seagrass.
Do some have peanut allergies?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know. You know, there's probably a lot of peanuts being consumed by sharks.
I bet.
And peanut shells as people on boats are throwing peanut shells in the water.
Right.
Yeah, I just don't get in. I cannot believe how much litter is in the ocean, and that is really affecting things. If you don't do anything, don't litter and stop using straws. Aren't straws, plastic straws, really bad for the ocean?
Yeah, we have the Shed the Straw campaign at Shedd Aquarium, and every year America alone disposes of 500 million straws.
Hmm.
And we calculated if you put those end to end based on the average straw length, that wraps around the earth 1.5 times.
Wow.
Why don't people go back to the paper straws? I know they didn't last very long, but aren't they more biodegradable?
Absolutely are. There's other biodegradable options. Also, reusable straws are becoming very popular now.
Oh, all right. That's good news. Give us more trivia. What else do you have?
Okay, here's one. How many senses do you think sharks have? We have 5 senses. Sharks probably have more. How many do you think they have?
More? What? They probably have radar, too.
Right.
Sharkdar,
they call it.
So I'm going 6.
8.
8. Well, it's right in the middle. It's actually 7 senses.
What do they have additional to us?
So they have all our 5 senses, but then additional to that, they have the lateral line, which most fish have. That's a series of pressure-sensing pores that run along their body. Most fish use that for schooling. When you see them schooling very tightly, they can maintain their distance based on this pressure-sensing system. But sharks can actually use that for predation. They can feel things moving beside them and turn on them and strike them.
That's pretty cool.
The most impressive sense of all is electromagnetic reception. So they can actually detect.
They can pick up WGN radio.
Absolutely. They can detect electromagnetic fields using a sensory system called the Empalia of Lorenzini. So they have these electric receptive pores on their snout, and they have tubes that run through their head, and they're filled with a very potassium-rich jelly that's the same electrical conductivity as seawater. And as electrical fields pass through these tubes, it displaces tiny little hairs on the sides of the tubes, and they can actually tell the intensity and the direction of electric fields.
Do other sea creatures have that, or just sharks?
There's a few other aquatic animals that have this, but sharks is the most evolved and the most famous.
Oh, wow.
And we think they use this for navigation, but also again predation. When animals bury themselves in the sand and sediment fish, even the beating of their heart is producing electrical pulses, even tiny,
so
and they can actually find that and dig them out. You know,
That is kind of like radar. That's pretty cool.
That's excellent. Wow.
So they say that, you know, dolphins are very highly intelligent creatures. Are sharks smart?
Sharks actually have the biggest brains of all fish species. The biggest brain of any fish species is actually in the manta ray. They have a very, very large brain, very comparable to birds, actually. So for the aquatic environment, that's really, really amazing. I wouldn't say they're smart in the same way a dolphin is smart. They have very evolved and social thinking. Sharks' brains are actually largely geared to their sensory systems than these additional senses, their sense of smell, their sense of sight for some of them, and even hearing. And the lobes in their brains are very developed around their sensory systems. They're big brains. You can condition sharks very quickly, even quicker than you can, say, a cat. They pick up on things very quickly, but they don't have that high level of thinking. They're more intelligent from a survival and being perfect predator kind of way.
So by condition, you mean teach them things?
Yeah, you can, like the sharks at Shedd Aquarium, if you go on a shark feeding tour, you'll see that they feed the sharks at different places in the tank at different times, and they use cues, visual cues, for those sharks to say, hey, for different species, and they say, hey, it's your turn to feed now, and these sharks will come up to that area, and they'll feed them so that they're not all eating each other's food, and they can tell how much food each shark has eaten.
What's their favorite food?
Fish, generally. Generally, sharks eat fish. There are some species that are, specialized into crustaceans, crabs, and lobsters, and things like that. Others that eat, marine mammals, like great white sharks, eat a lot of seals. I'm sure you've seen those Shark Week shows. But generally, fish is the main diet item for
They're
sharks.
They're in a good place. They live in a good place for fish.
That's the perfect place, Wendy.
I'm fascinated by this. And if you want to watch Shark Week, do it at home. But if you want to experience Shark Week, you can go to the Shedd Aquarium. Stephen Kessel, Director of Marine Research for the Shedd Aquarium. Sheddaquarium.org, and on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And so nice to meet you, and welcome to Chicago.
Thank you so much for having us here. It's always a pleasure. I love talking about sharks, and whenever people give me an opportunity to do that, I'm happy to do it.
Perfect. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.